The Rangers fell to the Islanders 4-2 on Tuesday night. Mika also fell after a hit from Adam Pellick. Larry Brooks and I will debate whether it was intentional or not. We'll discuss the playoff standings, potential Rangers playoff opponents, and also give a tribute to my friend Tim Wakefield. It's all coming up on Up in the Blue Seats from the New York Post next.
Ladies and gentlemen, we ask that you direct your attention to center ice for a special presentation.
Welcome back to Up in the Blue Seats, our New York Rangers podcast from the New York Post. I'm former Ranger Brian Boyle. No O'Malley this week. We do have our Hall of Famer here with me from the New York Post, the great Larry Brooks. All right, Larry, we got to get right into it. I want to know what you think about the hit on Mika Zibanejad. Matthew Pellick at center ice. I don't know. I don't see a lot there.
Well, first, let me tell you that the emotion emanating from Peter Laviolette was palpable last night. I was like, you know, a foot away from him, a foot and a half away from him. And he was almost like hyperventilating. He was irate. He was livid. He was fuming. And I actually said to Molly last night that I would not want to be in the position of being a player, being called into his office and being on the other side of a one-way message.
There's worse places. There's worse coaches' offices. I'll say that. But he does get fired up.
He was fuming. And from my perspective, I don't think there's any evidence that Pellick intentionally elbowed, shouldered Mika in the head. But I also think that it is possible that it's very cleverly disguised. Because I don't think the one thing to me is that Pellick doesn't seem surprised at all by the collision. Like he knows it's coming. It seems to me that he knows it's coming. Now I saw it from the back, and I haven't, you know, Peter Laviolette and the players were right there. You know, it was right in front of them. So they had a much, much better view of it than I did. But I just know, you know, now does Pellick have a responsibility if he sees out of the corner of his eye Mika charging across the ice and Pellick's now stationary and girding himself? Does he have any responsibility to get out of the way?
No.
Right?
No. Did I call him Matthew? I fought Matthew Pellick once. I think they might be related. But he, look, that was
So I don't know, but he was so angry. He seems so certain. You know,
he had to have seen it a different way. I don't see anything there.
And maybe Mika saw it that way too. Maybe, you know, again, now this is just pure speculation. So, you know, there's no really reason to go there. But he was certain, from what I understand. Patrick Waugh was shocked.
And he got these questions,
you know, and suddenly, you know, they win this huge game. They wind up, you know, hanging on in you know, the entire third period. But, they won the game. That's all that counts. And I assume he thinks he's going to have this, you know, mini triumphant, you know, press conference. And it's kind of like, hey, what about this dirty play? And it's like, what? Why are we talking about this? So, but, you know, the other thing I'm sure that charged up Peter was the non-call on the Dobson hit from behind on Trocheck. It was bad. And, you know,
that was a bad result.
10 seconds left in the game. It was a violent hit from behind. Mm-hmm. It should have been a five-minute game and game misconduct. So, honestly, it should be reviewed by the league. But the lack of a call there was just disgraceful. So, and he was livid about that one too. So maybe the two combined, you know, created this boiling point for him, but he was certain. No about it. And he left no doubt about it.
Yeah. He doesn't just come in guns blazing. He's obviously a smart guy. He's dealt with media for a very long time. He's been a head coach for a very long time. Now the Trocheck one, and I'm not trying to make excuses for the Islanders, but you're not letting anyone get towards your net. He reaches up, he's off balance. He's a few feet away from the boards. A 50% push there can do 100% damage. you just can't hit a guy in the numbers when he's in a vulnerable spot like that. That 100% is a penalty. And, you know, that's tough. So it's interesting, too, because I was on Friday night. I went to St. Louis and we had a big charity event for the V Foundation, NHL alumni versus Blues alumni. And Kelly Chase did the whole thing. And George Parris was there and he played. And after the game, I had to talk to him. I was in training camps with George way back when I was just starting out and had played against him a bunch. I had a lot of respect for him as a player. You know, he did things on the ice where he had to protect. He inserted himself into situations where he had to protect his teammates. Now he's inserted himself in an unenviable, just why would you do this to yourself sort of job that really is thankless. So I was trying to pick his brain a little bit on the criteria and how he goes about everything. And for about 25 minutes, he explained to me basically his job, how he goes through everything. I'm telling you, Larry, this is like, it's the worst job ever. In my opinion, it's so hard for him. And in different scenarios, like the Caden Gooley slash recently where he was on the bench and you could look at other slashes like that was more vicious than this and that. And it's almost like, and I'm speaking now in my own, how I kind of processed everything. It's almost like when you're a kid and your parents have rules and you think your sibling or whatever, somebody gets away with a little bit more in certain situations than the other person does. Like you're always going to feel slighted like that. But they're all, it's never apples to apples with what George does. He stresses over everything. He's got a team in place with the number of people. It goes down the line. There's a bunch of eyeballs on certain things. He goes, at the end of the day, you know, I'm responsible for handing out whatever the discipline is, whether there is some or isn't some. So I get all the heat, obviously, and that's my job. But this is what goes into it. It's crazy how many people are.
I recognize that. But I think a couple of things without getting into a long, drawn-out conversation with this. One thing is they are prisoners of their own precedents that have been established by a pattern of leniency.
Are they not starting to come out of that in the last maybe two, three months?
You think that they are, but then they slide back. It's very difficult. The other thing is, and I just, you know, from a philosophical standpoint, it's interesting to me that they have had a series of George Parros type people in that position instead of having skilled guys in that position saying, wait a second, you can make every rationalization you want for why this guy hit me in the head. You know, you can break it down to the 30 seconds, you know, the 1/16th of a set, you know, you can just break it down and tell me why. But I want to know why he's not skilled enough to avoid me on that play. You know, why I think Brian Leetch, you did this job for a while and left. And, you know, he was there for a short time. You know, I bet Shanahan started it. Shanahan, you know, created the video. Yeah, well, he essentially was a disciplinarian, Coleyhan, for a long time. Right. And then they hired Shanny, and he created it was all on his own. I remember we actually went out to lunch one day, and he said, hey, what would you think about this? And so he actually, he created the modern Department of Player Safety. And you know, there's Stefan Quintal took over the job for a short time.
He's still there.
You know, I think Pronger was involved, right?
That's funny.
And that's the kind of people, George Parris. I mean, that's the kind of people that you know, these are the.
Well, Pronger and Parris are different animals.
I mean, yeah, Parris, well, no, that's
wasn't fair. A dirty player. Oh, he fought.
Who wasn't?
Parris was not a dirty player.
Oh, okay. No, fair enough.
Pronger was a dirty player. He'll tell you he's a dirty player.
Fair enough. Yeah.
But it is interesting so much did go into it. I wish I had, because Shanny was there too on Friday night. Actually, he played. He was looking for some cookies, trying to score. I wanted to score, but I was trying to pass it to Dave Coulier, the Full House guy. He couldn't bury back door. I was getting rattled, but 7-7 tie. Anyways, it's that's hockey, and it's playoff time now for the Islanders. If it was game one of a playoffs or game seven of a playoffs, and I'm Adam Pellick, and I'm
listen, I get it.
Nika's coming across. I'm standing my ground. If he runs into my shoulder, it's his responsibility. You know, first center. I hope he's okay. The Trocheck one, you got some. You know, you got a little bit of an argument there because he just got blown up from behind. When I came back and played, it was towards the end of the season, my first or second year in Tampa. There was a puck behind the net. There was a battle going on. I'm looking at the puck, and I brace myself with Dan Girardi. And we were pretty much at the net, on the right side of the net, behind the goal line, but right by the back of the net. And I gave him kind of a little shove. And when he went, I tell you, he went flying. I couldn't believe.
I
literally just kind of braced myself.
Oh,
thinking he was going to bump me. He went flying into the boards.
I remember.
He was out cold.
Remember that.
And Keith Yandle comes and punches me in the face. I'm like, what just happened? I had no idea what happened. Yeah, they gave me a match penalty. Getting tossed off the ice. We have our goalie pulled, and I'm like, what are we doing? That's not even a penalty. We should be on the power play. I just got punched in the face. And I watched the replay. I'm like, oh my God, that looked bad. I honestly didn't do anything. I was just a little stronger than G. Sorry, G. Love you, buddy. I had to call him after. I was never the guy to like call and check in if a guy was okay after a hit.
Yeah.
I thought that was stupid. I didn't understand why people did that. It's like we're playing hockey.
Really? I mean, if you put a guy in the hospital or something, you wouldn't check in?
In the hospitals, yeah, that's different.
Yeah,
but during, if you
concussed a guy, you know, and he was out for a month or so, you know, you knew he was going through a tough time.
Yeah, maybe. I just never. I mean, it happens to me. It'll happen to you. And I mean, I got hurt. Luke Shen hit me, and I was kind of buddies with him. He hurt my knee when my fourth year in New York. He reached out, but like 2 months prior, we're in the Bahamas together at All-Star break, having beers. So that was like, yeah, I'll be fine. He's like, I'm sorry. I didn't even know what I did. I'm like, you didn't do anything. Like my leg was in the air and you hip checked me and I tore my MCL.
Chris Neal didn't reach out.
Apparently at the end of the series, he was talking with Torts in the handshake line, and Torts came up to me after game seven and I was still in La La Land, but I was at the game. And he said, Chris Neal wanted to check on you, see how you're doing. And I think my response was to the effect of F that guy.
I'm sure it was.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Like, I don't whatever. But I don't see anything there. Patrick Waugh he summed it up nicely. He just said, you know, that's it. That's all. There's nothing there.
Well, you know what, too? I believe this was a display of honest emotion. That there was no,
performance. He had to have seen some angle or how, a certain way.
What I also think is that his Laviolette's full throated defense of his team and the way he talked about how hard they battled and how hard it was, you know, to play the game, to get through the game and to play that game and how proud he was. It all fits into the unity. All for one, you know, we've got your back. We've got each other's backs. And I think that's, you know, that's the message that this team sends. And that's the message that is coached, that is preached by the coach and is lived as best as it can by the team. That's not perfect. And, you know, by any stretch of the imagination, but it's a group that seems to really care about each other, and you know, they have each other's back, and I think that, you know, just played into the narrative last night with you know, Laviolette standing up for his team the way he did. And I also think too, if for a team that's essentially been, you know, in the playoffs for a couple of months and mathematically clinched it a while ago. This has been a challenging stretch for the Rangers. You know, they're playing heavy teams. They're playing teams that are all playing for something. You know, they've played a lot of rivalry games. They've played a lot of the other top six or seven teams in the league over the last 3 or 4 weeks. They're really getting no break. And, you know, will this be good for them? I think in a way, you know, it can be good for them. It's you know, they're kind of in this final stretch where I do think the coaching staff is learning about what's might work and might not work. in a first round when you're seeing the same team every other night for, you know, for 2 weeks. But, this is, other teams are playing for something that the Rangers are playing against. And the Rangers are playing for something, too. It's been a tough stretch of hockey for them. And they've responded extremely well most of the time.
But you know what it says to me? It says he wants the division. He wants the conference.
Oh, there's no doubt.
They want it. I don't know about President's Trophy, but I think they definitely want conference. They want tops in the conference.
Well, it's important. It's important. First of all, they've been there for a stretch. But and again, I don't believe that the players should be thinking this way, and I would guess that they're not. But we can. And why would you want to play Tampa Bay in the first round of the playoffs? I mean, you run through this entire season, you're going to finish somewhere, 112, 114, 116 points, and the first round you get Tampa Bay? Come on.
They look good right now. They look good. Tampa looks good. And it shouldn't matter, but again, you don't want to grind through a series in April to try and win a cup in the middle of June. Like it does matter. If that's how it works out, you're going to have to grind through it anyway. But if you can get through a series in five and another one in five or six, I'm telling you, it killed us in 2012 when we couldn't close them out. It's killed us before. Like, that is a reality. And so it works out how it should work out. If you win the conference in terms of at the regular season ending, you should get the best matchup. And there's a lot of talk.
But it doesn't work out. But it doesn't work out for the second place team.
And there's so much talk about 1 through 8. I've been seeing it since forever. Why are we not doing 1 through 8?
I don't have any idea. There is no rational explanation for
nothing.
It, except for the fact the NHL likes its brackets. So they can put out, because the brackets are fixed this way. If you're reseeding the entire playoffs, which is the only equitable way to do it, then you can't have a bracket.
Well, how much money is a bracket?
What I don't understand.
What does that generate?
This is what I don't understand. What I don't understand is why general managers and team owners are not upset over this. You're a general manager. You're trying to build the best team.
Boston's going to be upset about it. Boston's going to be upset about it.
Well, right.
That might help this.
But they don't seem to be. I mean, remember a couple of years ago? Well, I think there was a year. Were you in Nashville the year they played Winnipeg in the second round of the playoffs?
No, we got bounced.
No.
They traded for me because they thought they were playing Winnipeg.
Okay. So, but 1 year they played in the second round and they had the best two records in the league.
Yeah.
And that's how they set it up. It's crazy. The way this format is set up. Now, this year, there's not much disparity. And it's not as if one division is heavily weighted to the other division. When that happens, then there's chaos. Then you get Nashville, Winnipeg in the second round when they're the two best teams in the league. Now,
well, Central will be like that.
Now it just seems, it's going to be the second place team in the East that gets caught in this horrendous first round matchup. You know, what it should be is 1-8, 2-7. But it's not. And it would, listen, the Rangers might be able to get through a series against Tampa. I don't want to sound defeatist now. And you can make the case.
I still think they can beat them.
If they take care of Tampa in the first round quickly, it gives them, it gives them added confidence. I mean, it's not gloom and doom if they play the Lightning in the first round, but it seems like it'd be inviting a lot of trouble. they really don't need.
Yeah. Look, it's sport. It's there are rules. There should be rules in place for fairness. It sounds like I'm going back on everything I've said. If I'm a player on the Rangers, I don't care. I'm telling you, I don't care.
Yeah,
we all probably have our preferences. I had preferences, yeah. But it didn't matter. I liked playing certain teams. I felt good against them, whatever. The sight lines in the building, all that stuff. Like, I go into Pittsburgh. I always had good games in Pittsburgh. So I got I signed in Pittsburgh. It was great. But there's no reason you play for 6 months, 82 of these things, and then you just make up some not even really geographical divisions.
There is no explanation. They talk about Well, the 2-3 within the division promotes rivalries. Come on. Yeah. You're only playing your division rivals 3 or 4 times during the season. What are we talking about rivalries now? Come on. It makes no sense. And for so long, the NHL had the most equitable system because it reseeded after every round. So you're all, you know, if you were finishing first, you always got the lowest team. If you were finishing second, you always got the next to lowest rung team on the ladder. So it worked perfectly. They switched it for no discernible reason. And again, you don't have this groundswell of general managers and owners saying this is not fair. What it seems to me is they take the collective approach that, well, maybe we'll be the team that finishes 8th one year and kind of makes, you know, and kind of makes it through because we have a favorable draw. You know, maybe we're going to be an average team one year, but that's not the way you build your team. You don't build your team to be average. You build your team to be the best. So it really baffles me. It baffles me. It does. And it creates, it tends to create a scenario where the power matchups are early in the playoffs.
Yes. First round's awesome.
And it's great for the viewership, but then when those power teams are eliminated in the first and second round, the viewership drops.
Yeah.
You know, it would be like in tennis. If you know, back in the day, you had Federer and Nadal hooking up in the third round of a draw of a major. Why would you? Hey, honestly, or if you're right now, you had Alcaraz and Djokovic playing in the second round. What would you be doing? Why would you be doing that? And it's kind of like in all of these tournaments, people love upsets, early round upsets, until the consequences are there later in the tournament and you have lesser teams, lesser players playing, and there's less interest. So, you know, the best hockey in the playoffs comes for a variety of reasons in the first two rounds. The matchups are generally better. The players are fresher. You know, everybody's not, you know, limping, you know, everybody's not playing on one leg.
Oh, it hurts.
I mean, I've always thought, honestly, that because of how hard this is, the first two rounds should both be best of five. But of course,
that's a huge hit to the piggy bank.
No, they would never do it. Yeah. But I think from a competitive standpoint, you'd see much better hockey in the conference finals and in the Stanley Cup finals. The Stanley Cup finals, it's a war of attrition. Honestly, it just is. And you'd rather see the highest quality hockey being played in the finals. And it's so rare that you do, and it's understandable. I mean, you know, these guys, you know, what you go through is you know, physically is I'm sure emotionally too, but just physically is remarkable. You know what you put yourselves through.
And then when it's over, you give it 3 days and you're back in after it again. But that's how it is now, which I didn't mind because I didn't want to be off too long.
What did you do the second summer? After 15.
Yeah, that's a good question. We hung out for a bit. Declan was my oldest was like not even a month old, so I was a new dad. But I was back skating, working out pretty quick after. You just have to get back on the ice. It's such a pain. Back to back was happened to me in college too. Back to back national title losses, and so you want to get on the ice. It's like I gotta flush this somehow, and you just get back to work. And then the third year we lost in the conference finals. If we win that series, we win the cup. That was the final. So you get close, but there's just going back to the 1-8. And imagine being in the East and complaining as a GM, and then the West is like, well, okay, I'm in Vancouver and my first round matchup's Nashville, and we got to do that. So after 11 days, we beat that or whatever. We've flown back across the country, you know, and then, or it's like the travel and it's nuts for in the West. Plus you have this kind of gimmicky sort of thing. And I don't know. I just don't know how many dollars it generates. I don't know how it could generate that much money where it's no one saying anything that's, you know, of significance in the league other than, no, this is the way we're doing it. That's right. Kind of all you get, right?
Right.
No, we're going to do it this way. Why? This is yeah. the way we're going to do it.
Right.
Okay. It right. doesn't make any sense.
It doesn't.
But the Rangers, they finished with Philly. They got the Islanders again Saturday. And then
how about the Flyers?
Oh, my man. Oh,
you know,
I argue with Mike Rupp all year. I'm like, they're making it. They're making it. He goes, they're going to fall apart.
How did you know? Apart. You know what? There, this was a season up to, say, 2-3 weeks ago that was 100% positive. If you divorce Carter Hart, you know, from the hockey element of the Flyers, right? It was nothing but upside. Nothing. You know, this team was going to make the playoffs. They were like at least a year ahead, maybe two.
Second in the division for half the year. Second in the Metro.
Right. And there was a stretch where they were like a point or two behind the Rangers. Yeah. Right. They were right there. And now they have turned this entirely positive season into a tire fire. I'm sorry. 8 straight losses, and they are getting pounded every night.
It's nothing. They lose by four period.
Or five. They lose by 4 or 5 goals every night.
They gave up 9 last night.
They've given up. Yeah, they've given up 4 goals or more in every one of the 8 losses. Yeah, I think they're going to be recriminations. Well, you know what they are, I don't know. I'm not there every day. Even if I were there every day, I wouldn't know probably.
why?
But this was a situation where everyone was coming out ahead, and now there are going to be hard questions like what happened? Why did this happen? And you know, I have my a theory or two, but so Thursday night's game is going to be a hard game for the Rangers against the Flyers. I mean, it's going to be a hard game. Then obviously Saturday afternoon is a hard game, and then against the Islanders, and then Monday against Ottawa shouldn't be too, you know, should be a final, you know, just a final walkthrough. Actually,
little shirt off your back night or something.
But if the Rangers need to win that game in order to clinch first place in the East, they're going to have to play that game. You know, it's not like you can just go out.
I think as a player, you have to anyways, because that's when you actually physically can get hurt. If you're not invested and do the same things the same way, you could physically get hurt, which isn't good. But they got time. I mean, 5 days.
Yeah.
So they have that Monday game, and then they have 5 days, isn't it? April 20th.
They'll start Saturday or Sunday. Yeah, they'll start the 20th or 21st.
They'll
have some time. Yeah.
Why is it so late, Larry?
Well, the season doesn't end until Wednesday. They end on Monday. So the season ends on Wednesday.
Season used
Wednesday.
To end first week in April.
Yeah. Well,
because this is the way we're doing it.
This is the way we're doing it. You know what? Because teams and it's not as it may not apply as much now, but teams didn't want to play home games in October. You know, because you'd think the season really should start the first week of October. And that's when it should start. If not the last week of September. You know, the first week of October, but teams don't want to have home dates in October. So, you know, you always
too
have
bad. That's the way it is.
Because, you know, but that's what, you know, the owners say, we don't want our home dates in October. We only get 88% of capacity in October. We get 97% in December, January, February. So that's when we want our home dates. And so, you know, that's an issue. And so everything gets pushed back. There's the bye week. There are, it's a difficult schedule because I don't understand why there are so many nights that there's one game on the schedule. You look at it and say, how could this be? Why are they playing one game tonight? And then, you see a team playing 5 games in 7 days, and you know, and they've played 1 in the last 6. So, but again, I'm not dealing, you know, imagine trying to make the schedule.
No.
You know? I mean, honestly, this is something that after like an hour of looking at it, I would just say, you know, I quit. Yeah. I quit. You know, good luck. I would write a note. I would write a note to my, you know, successor. I would write good luck to you. You know, that would be my advice.
Like Brian Leach working for Department of Player Safety.
Yeah, Brian
Leach. Thanks. I'm done.
Yeah.
Look, they could Rangers could play. I mean, who the heck knows? It's gonna be fun to see who gets in. I've loved watching what Pitt's been able to do, specifically what Sid's been able to do, just dragging them into that. But it could be Caps, could be Pens, Islanders, Red Wings, or it could be the Flyers. So if they take care of business the way they've been doing all year, you got to give them a lot of credit. There was a challenging 6 weeks, I think.
Yeah.
And they here's
the unanswerable question. If the All-Star break had come 3 weeks later,
ooh,
what would those 3 weeks have looked like for the Rangers? Did they need that break to reset themselves, or were they going to come out of it anyway? Because if you think about it, they won 12 out of 26 games. It was a long stretch where they weren't very good. So if you add another 10 games to that, and they're 4-4-2, then you're looking at a team that's and then you're not in first place anymore. Now you're trying, now you're in that wild card territory. So, it's just, and I'm not suggesting that they don't deserve as much credit. Maybe they deserve more for recognizing that things needed to change, that what had gone on the previous 6 or 7 weeks was not acceptable. No one was going to accept it, and they needed to fix it immediately. And they came out, with tough games. They came out, they opened against Colorado and Tampa, mm-hmm. and they won both of those games. So, I remember being in Toronto at the All-Star game thinking, wow, if they lose these two, then what are we looking at? But, they reversed it immediately coming out of the break. They were, a different team. They've lost, six games since the end of January. Honestly, their record. And I remember thinking this, and it was the year after you left, in 14-15, the President's Trophy year. And they won that with Hank being out like for 7 weeks. That was when, Cam.
Was that his neck?
Yeah, he got hit in the throat.
Shot.
And I remember thinking, these guys never lose. They never, that was more expected because that, it seemed like there was more pedigree to that team. Mm-hmm. They had a real good playoff history and, they'd gone to the finals the year before. But that was a team that just won games. And, won games until, they couldn't win the fourth game against you.
That was I remember being in that series. I'm like, if they turn it on, we don't have an answer. And they did.
It's the most mystifying playoff. And I know Zouk was out. Zouk had gotten hurt in the first round.
Yeah.
So he was out. And Girardi and Staal and McDonough were all hurt by the end of the series.
And Yandel.
But, yeah, right, and Keith. And but it didn't stop them from scoring like a million goals in Tampa, and it didn't stop them from being shut out the last two games of the quarter. It is the most mystifying series.
Weird.
That I can
try
recall.
Playing in it. We couldn't stop them. We're at home, and I'm like, that light went off 6-7 times every time we're at home. I'm like, what? I'm like, how is this?
Yeah.
Then we go put on a clinic.
Rick Nash's best game as a Ranger. His best. He was great.
Yeah.
He was great on the road in that series. Great. He and JT were playing together.
Yeah.
Yeah.
JT almost broke my kneecap with a slapper. But that was it. Yeah, that was this team. I mean, this team is, it's a pleasure to cover them now. It's not just Igor. There was a certain energy that they were going through during that tough stretch where you know, I saw a lot of sunken shoulders on the bench. I saw a lot of, it's not our night. And then I didn't see a lot of pushback. And then they did early in the year. They had something to prove and they proved it. And then they went through that lull. It was a long one. They got their goalie figured out, or he figured himself out. And then they all had that attitude again. Like, no, we're winning. We're better. And they're winning games. They're beating good teams. They're getting contributions from a lot of people.
You know, it just reminded me that, and you know, this is the, you know, a Rangers focused podcast, but that, and I'm not obviously second guessing Patrick Waugh at all, but the fact that Varlamov is now their number one goalie, and they're playing a game against the Rangers that they need to win, and it's not Sorokin. It's kind of like, okay, I get it. But it would be like if the Rangers were in that position and suddenly you're saying, well, Jonathan Quick's going to play this game. And it's like, well, wait a second. I thought Sorokin was the best goalie in the history of the world. You know, it's fascinating. It's fascinating, honestly, because if anyone had said at any point last year or even through December, well, we're going to have a must win game against the Rangers, both of our goalies are going to be healthy, and it's not going to be Sorokin, people would have said, what are you talking about? So, you know, it's just so interesting because we fixated so much on the January issues that Shesterkin was having. And, well, Quick's going to be the number one. Quick's going to be the one. I was like, what are you talking about? You know, but Varlamov is the number one.
Yeah, right. It happened. Yeah. He laughed it off, and then it happened. But who's going to argue with Patrick?
No, Wall, you didn't. No,
who
you
decides
can't.
To play goal?
No. Of course.
Like, you're going to go into, hey, Patrick, I really think you're making a mistake here.
Yeah.
I can't hear you. My two Stanley Cup ring plug in my ear.
Oh, yeah.
Good stuff. I can't wait for the last week watching. I want to see kind of what Lavi does with lines. Hopefully, Mika's fine. Do you have a report on that? Everything checked out or no? Nothing.
We'll get a report next
time.
Next training camp, we'll get a report.
Right. Pulling teeth. All right. Well, hopefully he's fine. I think that was,
I don't know. Fast sport. Again, obviously, he was on the bench for the final seconds or, shift or of the game. And if certainly he had not passed any tests you went through, he would not have been on
the bench. You're not allowed back.
Now, whether that means he's going to play Thursday night, I don't know about that.
Sometimes. I mean, whiplash has some similarities to a concussion.
Yeah. He had a whiplash type injury 5-6 years ago that he was out for a while. I think it was on a reverse hit from Bergeron. He was out for a while.
Long term, it's not a big thing, but those are not pleasant. I've had one, and you can't move your head. You get nauseous. It's
right.
It's no good.
So
no
way. Whether he's going to replace tonight, there are a couple of decisions. I think Zach Jones played so well against Montreal the other night that he has inserted himself into the mix, and I would like to see Zach Jones play the rest of the way. I would like to see Zach Jones in the lineup for the
remainder. I know Molly loves shouting him out, and the UMass product has been, man, that's impressive to me. I mean, I was with him at Worlds years ago. He's a young kid coming out of school, and to be able to do what he did, not playing, and then when he had to play well, really well, and earn that trust. They're hard decisions. I mean, you want that depth if you're a manager. If you're Chris Drew, you want that depth. You want the decisions to be hard. I mean, I'm sure Lavi wants more good players. He doesn't want to just say, this is all we have, and trot the same guys out. And that internal competition, that's not pleasant sometimes, but it makes your team better. So the fact that he's a contributing member now, more so than obviously he was the first, 80% of the year almost. It's a great thing. And he adds an element. If he plays with that confidence in a playoff scenario, then that's tough to scout. That's tough to, game plan for. So it'll be fun. It'll be a fun final week. Thank you, Larry. we're wrapping up here. And as always, appreciate your insights. That was fun.
Thanks.
You got it.
See you next week.
All right, cool, man. Coming up next, we got the boiling point, but it's not a boiling point. We got a little tribute here action to our buddy Timmy Wakefield, what the Red Sox did for opening day. So all you Yankee fans, sorry, but you're going to have to listen to me talk about the Red Sox for like 2 minutes.
He came back at the end from that vicious hit. Yeah, he came back. That vicious shoulder elbow to the head. Watch it.
You think it was intentional that it wasn't a collision?
I do.
All right, I'm going to take my boiling point minute here, and I'm going to shift it to something that I like to bring a little bit of attention to, and it's a tribute that happened at Fenway Park, the Red Sox home opener, for a great man and a great woman in Tim and Stacy Wakefield. They both died way too soon. We lost them tragically, Tim and then Stacy shortly after, and the Red Sox did a great thing. They honored him. Actually honored both of them at their opening day. We saw their kids, Brianna and Trevor, on the field and unveiled his number 49 on the wall. And he's a great man. He lived a couple houses down from me when he was here. In the winter, he's in Florida. But when we were here together in the summer, I saw him quite a bit, played some golf with him. He introduced me to a lot of people, brought me down to a pro-am down in Connecticut that they play every year. Guy was on his phone a lot, talking and helping and trying to make the world a better place. You know, he and his wife really did a tremendous amount for other people. Never really asked for much, until his wife got sick. And when she got sick, he dropped everything to try and help her. And, it's just really sad. So we feel for the kids, obviously. You know, it happened a few months ago, and then Stacy was more recent. But I just want to let people know that they were great people. They did things the right way, and I wanted to take time here to honor them. Sorry if, even if you are a Yankees fan, I'm sure you know. And quick story, I asked him after he'd won, a couple World Series with the Red Sox. We were on the drive down to Connecticut. It was about a two-hour drive, and I had to ask him. I said, do you still think about Aaron Boone hitting that home run, the walk-off in the playoffs in 2003? And he looked me in the eye, and he says, every single day. He was a competitor. I knew he threw knuckleballs, but this guy was a competitor. He was a ball player. He loved his craft. He did it forever. He had 200 wins as a pitcher in the major leagues, which is unbelievable. Even after winning championships, still bugged him, the Aaron Boone thing. But he's just a great man. So I wanted to just take a little bit of time. I know it's probably longer than a minute, but he's wonderful. He's missed. So is Stacy. They're great people. Their loss is felt throughout our neighborhood here every day. And we just always wish for the absolute best for Brianna and for Trevor and all his former teammates. I know it's hard, really hard for all of them too, because they were teammates for a long time. They're still teammates now, so it's tough. So our prayers are for that family, and good on the Red Sox for doing a wonderful job honoring that family yesterday at their opening day.
I follow the league, and people honestly call me a loser for how closely I follow it, but I like to just see the different scenarios and how it plays out. But yeah, I think everyone's aware of what's going on.
Jake Brown, producer of the show here. You've heard me on past seasons of the podcast.
Yeah.
Might have forgot what my voice sounds like. Some people might turn it off. Some might say, oh, look, he's back in a Dixie Cup shirt that Brian would say you saw in the Max and Saved by the Bell. An Asian size 4XL, the conversion said American XL. Clearly it was not, because it's still a little bit big on me. But we're rocking it here. To close out episode 152 of Up in the Blue Seats, our New York Rangers podcast from the New York Post. Let's close it out like we always do, like you and Molly always do. You'll kick us off with your first star of the week.
I got to go with Christopher Kreider. He's going to get 40. I'm not jinxing. There's no jinx. He's getting 40. What a year. So many guys. What a year. Maybe next podcast we'll kind of go down a list and say what we loved about the whole lineup. But for right now, I got Kreider just doing his thing in front of the net. Always he's always there. He's just producing. And what a deal, him long-term, being there for so long. It's just, it's great to see. Love Crides, and let's go. Get the 40.
Over, under, price to get in the Garden when his number is retired in the Raptors, probably around $600. It would be my guess, just to get in the nosebleeds or standing room when his number gets retired one day. Another guy who, if they win a cup, his number gets retired one day is Mika Zibanejad. He's my second star of the week. More so for the fact, listen, he had 2 goals against the Canadiens. He's been playing pretty well. 6 points in the month of April so far. He's dishing, he's scoring. But him being healthy, after that hit, controversial or not, however you want to call it, the fact that he got up and there was no, well, we know of serious injury, who knows? Maybe he does miss the game Thursday. The fact that he's okay and he's not going to miss time, we think, is monumental for the Rangers, Brian, because if they were without Mika Zibanejad in the first round, who knows what could happen? They need Mika magic come playoff time. So he's the second star. And our joint star, I think we agree, the entire team, because the New York Rangers, Brian, have tied a franchise record for wins in a single season with 53. Their next win, and if you assume they win one of the last three games, they're all at home, they'll get to do it in front of the home fans at the Garden, win a franchise record 54 games. That's pretty special.
Yeah, and they need to. They need to. They want to win that conference. They want the, for sure want the second wild card, I think, and they want to win that conference. And it just puts a bow on what they've done, what they've battled through, that lull we had in the middle of the season that Larry and I talked about. Like, during that time, you think this is going to be a franchise record-setting year? No, no one thought that. So, yeah, give the team credit. Give, you know, give Chris Drury credit, Pierre Laviolette. Some changes last offseason. It seemed to be working out really well. And you can't fluke your way into 50 wins. And you don't really just break 100-year-old records that often either. So, congrats to them. Get it done. It's been a great season so far.
And it's just the start of what can be a special postseason. It has all the makings. This Rangers team, you know, we don't want to be mushes here, like you like to say, a mush, but there's a special feeling of magic in the air, and they got to hold it down for the Garden. The New York Knicks are without Julius Randle for the rest of the year. They might be screwed. That was my hope as one of the teams. Now that team has to be the Rangers, because it does not look like the Knicks without their second best player are going to be able to go on a run. So we're excited for the playoffs, and we'll be covering it here on Up in the Blue Seats. Our plan right now is to do, after every two games, to do a show. So likely after, we'll do a playoff preview. Molly will be back next week with Larry and you for the playoff preview, likely next Wednesday, with the playoffs beginning Saturday, Sunday. Once we know the dates, the times, we'll have a playoff preview. And then after game two, after game four, and then TBD. You know, if it's a sweep, after game four, after game five, whenever the series ends, stay tuned for that. And make sure you're subscribed on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google, Amazon, wherever you get your podcasts. Give us that 5-star rating. Write in a nice review. Subscribe to the New York Post Sports YouTube page. You can watch Brian. You can watch Larry on there. You can see the Dixie Cup shirt right now. If you're watching, give us a thumbs up if you like the show, if you like the Dixie Cup shirt, and comment below. How are you feeling about the blue shirts? Who do you want the Rangers to end up playing in the first round? They could play one of about five teams right now. We'll have that answer on the next episode. So sound off in the comments. And what'd you think of the hit on Mika? Was it dirty? Was it accidental? Let us know what you think in the comments. For Brian Boyle, for Larry Brooks, I'm Jake Brown. Molly and Larry and Brian are back next week for a regular season recap and a Rangers playoff preview. It's time. The most wonderful time of the year. The Stanley Cup playoffs begins next weekend, and we'll be here to cover it right here on Up in the Blue Seats.